Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. Yes, one of those. My name is Michael Bailey. I'm with Chief Norwich City writer Paddy Davitt and our esteemed Eastern Daily Press colleague David Freezer to do a podcast. It's been quite a while, so we've got ourselves in a room with a microphone, with a newspaper. Dave's going to check some stuff on his phone as well. And because we're audio-wise, no one will notice, Dave, so that'll be good.
Not allowed to do that, yeah.
Just texting the girlfriend, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Well, let us know when you're done. So, of course, quite a bit to talk about. I have no idea when we last did one of these, and we've done loads of videos, and obviously you know all about the Pinken.com YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/thepinken channel, so kind of the same words in a different order. So there's loads of stuff there from all three of us over the course of weeks and months on end. But as we are now, Norwich City are going to take a little breather for the international break, Paddy, and these always seem to be quite key moments because we've had one meltdown in August, one euphoric one after Reading, and where are we this time after a 2-1 defeat at Bolton, but I guess more concerningly, three straight league defeats.
Yeah, I like your terminology. Meltdown to euphoria. Probably somewhere in between. I think it's safe to say not as bad as Millwall, because we saw what that group of players could do after Millwall. But by the same token, because we've seen that, it's very now hugely frustrating that off the back of Arsenal, they've gone loss. And OK, you could probably mitigate the two home games. A, they're playing two sides who expect to be up there. B, it was just after Arsenal, the physical toll that took, maybe mental as well. But Bolton was a hard one to process because there's no real excuse there. You know, team bottom of the pile, OK, looked to have turned it around a little bit. But as we saw in the first 25 minutes, Norwich score, I think it's a comfortable win. So no doubt that's a topic we'll be getting into in due course. But yeah, definitely a step back for me and work to be done, top end and back end of the pitch.
We've already had a big question on Twitter effectively saying, what's gone wrong? Why is it that Norwich were so good and so tidy and doing so well? And was it down to the energy? Was it down to the quality? Was it this, that and the other? I think what I came back with, so I'll save you think of it just straight off the top of your head, Dave, but what I think I came up with is that effectively they've just not been as tight at the back, so they haven't been able to get themselves ahead in these games. I mean, regardless of how tired they are, and even in the game against Derby, if Norwich had got ahead, the dynamic of that game would be completely different. Obviously, that then sadly links me straight into Alex Tetti, but maybe that's one and a point for a little bit later on. But what do you reckon?
Well, yeah, Tetti's definitely been a big part of that. And how many games do we sit there saying, cool, if Norwich can just get a goal here and get ahead, then they've got this one in the bag? And it was the same again at Bolton on Saturday. The first 15, 20 minutes, they're passing it around. I mean, far too much sideways passing again, but they were firmly in control of the game. And then Bolton just suddenly thought, well, hang on, they're not going anywhere here. And Sammy Amiobi pretty much took it by the scruff of the neck, and they realised that they had the beating of Norwich pretty quickly. And, you know, two goals in 5 minutes, and they pretty much got it done. To follow on from your question, I would say that it's easy, obviously, in hindsight, but those games that they have won away from home, they've all been tight games. They've all been decided by, you know, a moment of magic from James Maddison or whatever. You know, 1-0 at Borough, 1-0 at Sheffield United, 2-1 at Reading. At no point have we said, wow, Norwich were brilliant in that game. They absolutely dominated. They really, really deserved that win. You know, they played well, they showed good spirit, but they've not been running over teams in these results. So, as we all know, the Championship is about fine margins, and that has, with that little bit of tiredness perhaps from the League Cup exploits, the balance has just tipped in the wrong direction. And as Pad says, it wasn't, you know, in Millwall realms on Saturday. It wasn't a bad performance like that. They probably should have got a point, although that would have been harsh on Bolton, and they could have won the game. But yeah, it's just tipped in the wrong balance at the moment.
Yeah, how do you see it, Pad? What's the key issue? And I guess that comes down to what then gets worked on over these next 2 weeks, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, if it was one thing, then you would address it as they did after Millwall, because defensively they were all over the shop, and because they weren't in games, you know, you think of Villa, you think of Millwall, then the horse had already bolted, so they had to get that nice and solid, and they have done. But now, for me, the overriding issue is the goals, because if you leak in the odd goal here or there, that's fine, because you've got a goal threat at the other end of the pitch and you can sort of counteract an error or two from certain individuals. You know, Zimmerman, the last two games, he's He's just shown a little bit of naivety, a couple of his decision making, and he's got punished heavily, which probably he was making maybe similar type errors in that run of wins and positive results and getting away with it. But the reality is, even those Derby, I'm thinking the first goal on Saturday, that is mitigated if you're actually carrying a goal threat. And you know, the standout stat for me is now, I think that's 11 championship games and they've scored 2 goals only once, and that was at Reading. So if you're not going to score goals in decent numbers, your defence is all automatically then always going to be under pressure, because it's literally you concede one, right, we're not pulling this back because we can't score at the other end of the pitch. And obviously in that flows Tete, because Tete doesn't offer you a protection that a Tribal and a Reed axis doesn't do. But fundamentally, if they're scoring goals at the top end of the pitch, then a lot of the Tete aspect and a lot of the individual errors at the back are basically compensated for. So for me, it's all about where are the goals coming from.
It is a remarkable lack of goals from a side that scored 85, was it, last year? They couldn't stop scoring. Ultimately, that was the complete opposite of their issues. And I mean, the personnel's changed in a lot in many ways, yet some people look at it and go, it's still the same personnel, and some others. And Cameron Jerome's obviously got a lot of stick in the last week or two as well. Where are we pinning this? Because clearly, when Cam had 2 very decent chances early on, one very, very presentable chance that he didn't even hit the target.
Yeah, unacceptable.
Which, you know, did kind of sum that up. But yeah, I guess it's not just him, is it? It's the players that were chipping in around. I mean, Norwich didn't really have necessarily a prolific striker last season, yet they had so many other players chipping in with goals throughout, certainly at home, most definitely.
I almost feel sorry for Jerome at the moment. He doesn't even be able to seem to hit the target. He did it twice against Derby as well, didn't he? Where he curled one a yard wide, a yard over the bar in either half. And the miss on Saturday was inexplicable, to not even hit the target with it. I mean, as a coach, you must be so annoyed at that. I mean, early on, he also was denied by a save from Ben Anik, wasn't he, with his feet. And his confidence is clearly just so low in terms of finishing at the moment. But one thing that I thought he was doing early doors in trying to rectify that, and I think I said it to you early doors, Pat, didn't I, that he looked like he was staying more central, that he was trying to stay in the box and try and be in the right place at the right time. But as his frustration grew, he started chasing around after the ball. I remember there was one point where he head across just to stop Sammy Amiobi from clearing the ball. And you know, it was kind of one for the fans, really, look at the effort I'm putting in. But do you really want your striker out by the corner flag stopping the ball from getting cleared back towards your defence? It's not really his job, is it? And he just looked quite frustrated throughout the game. I mean, the thing on Saturday I would put sort of the lack of threat down to was really that Houlihan and Maddison were pretty much occupying the same positions and trying to keep out of each other's way. And that meant you've got 2 guys, and Vrančić does the same. If you've got any 2 of those 3 on the pitch at the same time, they're all playing around the box, particularly with Reed in the team as well. There's a lot of lateral movement there without anybody else getting beyond the line to free Jerome up. There's no dummy runners. There's no one else creating space. So Jerome's just there against, you know, 3 or 4 defenders all the time. So I feel a bit sorry for him. His confidence is clearly shot. And the only way you can really ease that is by getting another striker fit to give him a bit of a break.
It's a really curious midfield balance, isn't it? Because with Watkins and Murphy, you know they're going to basically be at the top end running directly. So you're not going to have any late runs, which, you know, I don't want to go over old faces, but Johnny Howson was very good at arriving in the box late and having that kind of forward running and breaking between the lines. I mean, as Dave says, there's not much in that midfield mix that's really going to get beyond the striker to support him. But then it's hard, isn't it? Because ultimately, Norwich probably did still create the chances where they should have at least got a point on Saturday. So it's twos and throws, I suppose.
It is, but ultimately, it comes down, it's very simple. You know, we can get a bit OTT with formations and philosophies and identities, but it's about players playing well consistently. Consistency is the key. You know, Jacob Murphy, this time last season, was outstanding pretty much every other week, creating goals, scoring goals. Look at the wide players, look at his brother, inconsistent. Wiltshire, inconsistent. Marley Watkins, when he's been in and when he's been out, inconsistent. There's too many in that Norwich team, particularly across midfield, who are not stamping their mark on games now. And that's why Alex Pritchard is so coveted and his return is so long waited for, because that period and towards the end of last season, every game he was making things happen. He was either scoring, he was creating, and that's why then, you know, there's less of a focus on Jerome or Oliveira, whoever's leading the line, because you have... And the only guy who's got approaching anywhere near any level of consistency in midfield this season is James Maddison. And you can see when he was on it and he was scoring goals and creating... It's no coincidence. Norwich's best part of the season has been when James Maddison was at his most consistent. But he's a 20-year-old lad. You know, we're talking about Wes here. He's a 20-year-old lad. You cannot expect him to be at that level and maintain it, because even Jacob tailed off last season, it's safe to say. So with young players, you get inconsistency. But there's too many in that team now who are not reaching a level that they're capable of. And as a result, that's why results are patchy, performances are patchy. And really, you know, it's really for players. It's as much as Farke can shuffle the deck chairs. I mean, he made four or five changes the last two league games. There's still the results aren't turning round. So he can go so far, but then the players have to pick up the baton and they actually have to produce consistency and quality. And if they do that, then I think the ship will get turned around.
Wilsker on Saturday, well, I thought that was probably his worst game yet. I thought he was absolutely dreadful. It was like watching an under-8 player. As soon as he got the ball, head down, run at people. And you are going to have some success with that if you keep doing it, but that just doesn't seem Championship standard to me.
I think the problem was the final ball was so poor when he did get past people. The amount of crosses I've seen hit defenders, or you're trying to hit one person in the box. I guess just on what you said, Pad, that's probably the hope, therefore, is that 2 weeks of rest, break, rest the mind a little bit and get focused, they should be back to it. It's almost why those next few games are so important, because they should be back to a level where they look fresher and they are back on it and the things are tweaked.
Well, I mean, certainly 2 weeks for the vast majority of those boys without a game, there will then be no... The lads are fatigued. Look at the run they've had, because when Barnsley come to Carr Road, they'll have had 2 weeks to prepare the bulk of those players. So that removes that element. But as I say, I'm still concerned that you know, the performance level of these players aren't where they need to be. And but as I say, that will, yeah, you're right. Yeah, there'll be no issues about look how weary Tom Dreiber looks, because he'll have had 2 weeks to get his energy levels topped up.
Yeah, let's hope so, most definitely. Well, you can hear my chat with Ivo Pinto. That's on the Pinken podcast feed, so dig that out. Or if you have a look at pinken.com, you'll be able to find it on there. There's a little clip of it here, along with some from Daniel Farke.
Yeah, it's really hard when you are playing as good as you are playing in the first minutes of the game, and then you concede the goal. And we should have stayed together and trying to avoid a second goal, because you know, when in away game, if you concede two goals and you are 2 goals back, it's always harder to come back. With 1-0, you can always come back, even in the last 5 minutes. If you score one goal, it's a draw, and you can search for the second goal to get the 3 points. But yeah, it just shows us that it doesn't matter how good you are playing, you have always to give your best to defend, to keep your goal safe. If you don't do that, you will be in trouble.
Yeah, pretty frustrated and pretty annoyed because you couldn't see this result coming in the first half. In the first 30 minutes, we had the game totally under control. We missed 4 chances. It was just a question of time when we scored. But yeah, we have to say today, congratulations to Bolton. They were effective. They used their first shots on the goal. They were effective. We were not. In this situation, we were not perfect in our defending. And when such a team who is 5 games unbeaten right now in a home game, 2-0 in lead in the second half, and try to do everything to get this straight 3 points, it's difficult. We tried a lot and created really some chances and missed a lot of chances again. Yeah, and we're just able to score in the, I don't know, in the last minute or whatever, it was too late to turn the game completely around. So pretty annoyed, because normally when we are a little bit more effective and score the first goal, we have to win this game, because we had this game totally under control. And for that, it's really frustrating, and I'm really annoyed today. Yes.
How much are you missing Alex Tetti at the moment? Because it's probably a lazy comparison to suggest that since Alex got injured, you've kind of struggled defensively in the midfield. Do you feel like you've missed him in the last few weeks?
Yeah, everybody knows that Alex is a very, very important player. He gives us balance in the midfield. He gives us muscles in the midfielder. But it's not just Alex. I think all the injured players makes they are good players, and we miss them, of course. But we just can count with the players that are here. So yeah, we are playing very good. We just need to keep our goal safe and try to score more. I think it's easy to say, but I think that's the main point. If you keep your goal safe and you try to score more, I think it's what we need now.
Yes, what can we say? So in the moment we have to defend perfectly to win games, because we scored too few. So, and it's always not about controlling a game and being the better team. It's always about the results. It's always about scoring goals and not conceding goals. And yeah, it's the same story during the whole season. So we have some problems to score more than perhaps one goal or whatever. And when you miss so many chances in the first half and also in the second half, and then you have to at least to defend 100% perfect. And we did a perfect defending in all of our last away games. Yeah, but today in this 10 minutes before the halftime, we did not, and there was pretty similar to defend, pretty easy to defend this goals, but we were not perfect today in our defending, and for that we have to accept the loss.
It's the international break, of course, and it's been lit up by James Maddison arriving for the England Under-21s on Twitter, Dave.
Yeah, that was nice of them to give us some exclusive Norwich content, wasn't it?
I mean, it'll be really interesting, A, whether he actually gets some game time, because, you know, it's a qualifier game and it's his first appearance for the Under-21s. His first appearance for England at any youth level, which is rather remarkable, or he certainly hasn't made an appearance for anyone before. And I guess we're curious to see how he'll get on, of course. He's already got a tremendously burgeoning reputation. So are Norwich fans hoping he continues to shine and does so on the international stage?
I'd have said it's pretty unlikely he'll start the game. They're in Ukraine. It's a qualifier. They still need wins. They are top of their group. But they did draw one of their four games so far, so, you know, it's far from sewn up for them. I'd imagine the best he can hope for is a sub appearance, but it's not like it's a friendly where they can chuck on seven players or anything. So I would have thought that we're probably looking at Adie Boothroyd just having a good look at him on this one, and from a Norwich point of view, I don't think, as much as it's a sense of pride to see a Norwich player playing for the England Under-21s, in the current situation, I don't think anyone's going to be too worried if Maddison doesn't play. It sounds like he'll stay with them for a good chunk of the break, that they're going to have like a bit of a training camp after the game as well, because they play on Friday, and so I guess he's not going to rejoin Norwich until sort of, you know, Wednesday or Thursday, maybe next week. But yeah, it's fully deserved. He did get an under-20s call up not long after joining Norwich when he went back to Coventry, but I think he had to pull out of that for injury. He certainly didn't play, and it is surprising that he's not been involved in the youth setup before, given how obviously talented he is. He obviously has some natural ability, doesn't he? So good for him. I'm sure his agent is chuffed, and adds to the talk that was already there, to be perfectly honest, among Norwich fans of the big teams are going to be sniffing pretty soon.
Well, they'll know all about him anyway, because they knew all about him when Norwich signed him, so I don't think there's any hiding what the impact James Maddison has made so far this season, and obviously we all hope he continues to do. The rest of the international break, it's obviously World Cup qualifying playoffs time, so I think we've got, you might have to help me out here, boys. Where's Houlihan?
Ireland, Denmark, Republic of Ireland, Denmark, isn't it? And Northern Ireland, Switzerland. Although there's no Tim Closer in the Switzerland squad, so Michael McGovern won't be coming up against Tim.
It's literally Tim and Michael McGovern and Wes Houlihan are the only ones really away. And then obviously Angus is also with James Maddison.
Watkins is with Wales for a couple of friendlies. But other than that, yeah, it's not as big an international haul as they've had before in recent years, certainly.
Decimated, but that's not the right word, but by the lack of Scotland involvement. So there's no Norwich City call-ups for Scotland. I don't know what's happened there.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, Grant Hanley was the only one in it last time, wasn't he? Naismith and Martinez, kind of understandable. No Stephen Whittaker now, around nowadays. Watkins, Wales have got friendlies against France and Panama. Panama in Cardiff, who apparently have qualified for the World Cup, but completely passed me by. But I'd imagine that's one where Marley could well get a chance if he doesn't get injured again.
Was that the Twitter videos of the commentators getting really, really excited when they qualified?
Yeah, was it then with the ball boy?
Yeah,
and the ball boy kicked, supposedly the ball boy, who kicked the ball away to kill some time. And they qualified at the expense of the USA, didn't they? That's it.
Unless I'm lumping all the South American and Central American countries together, which I hope I'm not, but I'm pretty sure it was Panama. So, that'll be good. How exciting. In terms of Norwich's under-23s, they've got some involvement today, haven't they? They're at Wolves. It should probably lead on to the debate we had in the first half as well, because what people say, Pad, is, why aren't we getting Pierre Foncault and Tristan Abrahams out here? You know, give them a chance, get them on the bench. And we've sort of had this debate a bit, I suppose, but the problem is, I guess, the more Norwich have issues up front, the more people will want at least to see it tried, because they'll consider what they are trying isn't working.
But as I say, to labour my point from earlier, that it's also the midfield. I don't think the midfield individually and collectively is helping a Jerome. I mean, in Jerome's defence, I just wanted to make the point that because of Oliveira's fitness issues, I've not statistically looked, but I'd imagine he's played more minutes than any Norwich player this season, and he's not getting any younger. So I think there is mitigation. Nobody's going to downplay some of the misses, certainly the one at Bolton, but you know, he's basically been flogged. Let's be honest with it. He's basically been pushed out there, and he's had to play pretty much week in, week out. And he's the only one, I think, if you went through the squad, who've had that sort of run. Maybe the centre backs, you could argue, but in terms of those younger lads, no, not for me. I think there's a massive gulf. Any time I've seen development football, massive gulf from that to the Championship. So no, if it's play Fonko instead of Jerome, no. If it's play Abrahams in front of Jerome, no. What it needs to be is get Oliveira fit.
Yes. And he is enjoying himself over in Portugal at the moment, hopefully getting fit as well, but he seems to be enjoying himself too. And one other debate that was had, I talked to my six things today about Alex Tetti, and I think the run is one win from five in August, then they only dropped 2 points when Tetti was available, and now they've only won once in five again since Tetti's been out, which is at least a nice pattern. But one person I mentioned, because Louis Thompson's obviously out, you could argue whether there's any natural backup for Alex Tetti, but Ben Godfrey is out playing with Shrewsbury, and let's be honest, Shrewsbury are what, towards the top of League One? Currently top of League One. It's not a million miles away from mid-table in the Championship, I suppose, if you're going to be really literal about it.
No, I think Ben Godfrey would have played a lot of football if he'd have been here still. It's very unfortunate for Louis Thompson, and obviously his career is largely on hold, and when he'll be back we're still not quite sure, but I think the likelihood of Ben Godfrey coming back in January is very likely as things stand, because as we know with Alex, his fitness isn't always that reliable, is it?
Even though they played for Shrewsbury in the Cup, I guess we're just sort of ignoring the League Cup stuff. FA Cup,
yeah, him and Morris both played, Morris scored. Yeah, I mean, that obviously cup ties them, but I think the league is probably the priority. And I think it maybe reflects a little bit badly on Daniel Farke that, and also the fans, everyone was like tribal and closer. Yeah, they were the ones, they were responsible for this upturn. But Tetti was in the mix there, wasn't he? And, you know, what the Twitter hashtag, no Tetti, no party, that was proven to be true. And the way they set up this season, Tetti wasn't really in the plans, was he? They were thinking that it was going to be Reed or and obviously Tribal's come in, and Tetti forced his way back in there, and now he's out of it. He's proved to be a massive miss. So yeah, I think Ben Godfrey's the only other thing without Louis Thompson in the mix, and certainly Ben Godfrey's a lot bigger physical unit than Louis Thompson as well. He is probably going to be needed to be that. You're going to need a Tribal or Reed next to a Tetti or a Godfrey, really. That's where we've seen the success come.
I mean, again, we've got to clarify it with the fact that Ben Godfrey has basically played almost no Championship football, certainly as a defensive midfielder, and we've got no idea if he'd be able to handle it. And that's, I guess, always the problem with these situations. The players who aren't playing become so much better.
Well, the bits and pieces we saw of him last year, he looked not far off being ready. I think he's, what, he must be pushing 20 years old now, I'd have thought. He did play a chunk of senior football for York when he was very young as well, so it's not totally new to him. And I, you know, in the under-23s, him and Morris were obviously, like Paddy said, it is a huge gulf between the under-23s and the first team, but those two, when they played, unless Godfrey was playing in centre defence, where I really don't think he's suited, they looked, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of the players in the Norwich team. So, and the same with Abrahams and Fonkeo. I saw them in, I haven't seen loads of them this season, but in the game at Lowestoft, the friendly they organised, they both looked pretty raw, to be honest. If anything, I'd have said Abrahams looked better, to be honest.
All factors into January, of course, Pad, and while we were having a few days off here and there, the accounts came out. It all painted a picture in the aftermath of Wolves, who obviously have spent loads of money, in terms of what Norwich do between now and January, which seems to be not a lot. Where does all this leave things? Because we've spoken a lot about the background of the football club, and we know everything they've done in the summer is really to try and make the framework that they are probably going to have work somehow.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, I've spoken to Stuart Webber on this subject, and he doesn't want to do any business in January. He's been quite clear about that. He's not a fan or an advocate of massive amounts of business, and then you layer on the financial realities. They don't have the money to do massive amounts of business. So I think the reality is, and fans won't want to hear it, I don't think they'll do any business unless, I'll paint a scenario that Oliveira breaks down again and he's out for a prolonged period of time and they're forced. Now, Webber was on record as saying they wasn't forced to go and get Hanley in, but it did look a bit of a panic measure given it came straight off the back of the Millwall game and the Wolves, the Villa game prior to that. And that guy hasn't played. So I don't see them doing any business at all in January, if I'm brutally honest. I think, as you rightly say, they've decided they want to go down this path of developing something organically as much as they can, bringing through young players. And if they were then to go and have a massive sort of turn around again in January, what does that say for all the work that's been done to this point? So there's two strands here. There's what they want to do and what they would be able to do financially, and on both of those, if you tie them together, they won't be able to do a great deal, and that's the bottom line.
And when everyone sits there saying, well, we need a striker in January, I mean, that's not happening unless they sell someone first, really, is it?
Strikers cost the most money because, for simple reason, they score goals, they decide games, they decide where your team finishes in the season. Norwich haven't got the money. Ultimately, they will not be able to buy anybody who is any better than what they've got. That's the top and bottom of it.
Well, I mean, they could look at a Premier League loan, I suppose, but as we know, they come with fees nowadays. They're not free. But equally, if you're getting in a Premier League loan, what does that say to Carlton Morris? I mean, if he is out on loan and is not considered good enough, then sell him. You're just holding up the guy's career because you're just paying for Shrewsbury to have a good player. If you don't think Carlton Morris is good enough to come in and bolster the squad, then sell him and get in a Premier League loan to help you for the rest of the season.
I guess unless they want to give him, they want to reassess it in next season and let him at least settle in for a season at a football club.
The only caveat I'd add to Dave's point about Premier League loans is we had this with Salter Clark, the Chelsea lad in the summer. Chelsea and the player himself, we're only going to go somewhere where he would more or less guaranteed to play week in, week out. Now, if you've still got Jerome and Oliveira on the books and you bring in this Premier League loanee, then you're going to have to play the Premier League loanee. And unless he's going to change the system and go two up top week in, week out, which he won't do, then what happens to Oliveira at the best of times is, difficult to manage. So if he's third choice, then good luck with that one.
If you look at Eddie Nketiah, obviously the guy that broke Norwich hearts for Arsenal, he's a young kid. Obviously, a prodigious talent, but is he going to do it in the Championship for Norwich? You know, little lad, pacey. Is he going to hold up the ball in the way that Jerome and Oliveira know how to do? I'm not sure.
I still have an issue if Norwich can bring in some more pace up front if they want, but if they don't play a way that means that they've got space to run into, it's kind of pointless, but that's just how I see it. Dave, you scared me this morning by saying that we are a third of the way through the season.
Yeah, it's what, 16 league games, is it? So just over a third, if you sort of try and split it like that.
That's what goes through your mind when you hear it's a third of the way through the season?
Not a lot, mate. I'm actually just looking at the screen saying West Ham have sacked Bilic. That's what's going through my mind.
Yeah,
that sounds about right, because it feels it's been pretty relentless. Saturday, Tuesday, throwing a few League Cup ties as well. But Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting, I mean, among most of the financial kind of numbers that came out for the accounts, I'm pretty sure Ed Balls was quoted as saying that they expect to be in the top six around Christmas. So what's going through my mind is now they've got plenty of work to do to get into that point. I think they're 4 points off sixth at the minute, and there's a lot of places between them. They're 13th. So between now and Christmas, to sort of achieve that objective, they're really going to have to hit the ground running the other side of the break.
Did he really say that?
I'm pretty sure he did, yeah.
Gosh. I mean,
the expectation is, I think, that they would be in and around the top six, yeah.
General.
I mean, I'm particularly worried they're not, because there is a little bit of a gap to the top six now. I mean, it's how quickly it changes, but it's not just that. It's the teams that are getting. Before you spend a lot of the season, early part of the season, going, oh, no one's running away with it. No one's really, you know, this is an open division. Rah rah rah. Well, now I would probably tell you that I reckon Wolves are shoehorns to go up in the top two. If they're not champions, I'll be very surprised. Sheffield United to me look like they've got something going on that Paul Lambert had going on. So do not discount them finishing in the top six. Bristol City have money. Cardiff have Neil Warnock. Middlesbrough have loads of money and have somehow started just to get their momentum back again. Aston Villa have spent a shed load, and then you've got Derby, who have also got loads of money and a pretty decent pragmatic manager, and all of a sudden you look at some real genuine contenders, and you know, two of them have beaten Norwich quite recently. Of course Norwich did win at Sheffield United and Middlesbrough, and that's why we need to figure out which Norwich this is we're dealing with. But you know, you're starting to see the shape of the challenge, and it all filters into the expectations of what this season is actually going to end up as for Norwich.
That's what I was thinking as you were saying it. It's actually starting to take shape as to how you could see it finishing not too far from that. I mean, Reading and Fulham are both still in the bottom half. Fulham seem to be having a few fun and games behind the scenes, and Jukanovic is still on a bit of a wobble. So, and Reading, Yapstam doesn't seem to be able to sort of shake off that playoff hangover. Hull are struggling down there. Sunderland are bottom. You know, there's some big clubs in this division, and between Norwich and the playoffs at the moment, you've got Derby, Forest, Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday, who all have resources. Mark Warburton seems to be getting Forest moved in the right direction with, you know, they've got new owners in over the summer who seem to be a bit more realistic. It's looking difficult, and then you've got Norwich and Preston and Brentford sort of sat bang in the middle, and you think they look like they might sort of be sitting in about their accurate position at the moment, but we just have to hope that Norwich have got more gears to go through, and that they, when they've got Pritchard and Oliveira and everyone there, that they can start to kick on again.
It's interesting, of course, because Derby then lost at home to Reading, didn't they, at the weekend, and Villa lost at home to Sheffield Wednesday. Wonderful goal by Adam Reach, by the way, to kick that one off. I mean, Forest are curious, aren't they? They're almost doing with Warburton what I guess the sort of thing Norwich want to do themselves. But the other teams that are doing it didn't have any money, did they? And Norwich have had their money, and they're still trying to adjust to what was, you know, a huge wage bill last year.
Yeah, but I'm not really getting this now that this, well, it is a work in progress, but the whole idea that literally they've just thrown the pieces up and we'll see how they get. I mean, they've had plenty of months now to start formulating what they're trying to do, and we did see results filtering down onto the pitch. So that's why it's frustrating. There seems to be a regressive element to it at the minute. But ultimately, you know, if you added Alex Tete to the centre of that midfield, you added an Alex Pritchard to the number 10 role, Maddison has to shift one, and you put Nelson Oliveira at the top end of the pitch, and you have them fit and firing for a period of games, Norwich would be flying up that table because they're all good players, and they can influence games in the Championship. So, as I say, where do you pitch this at the minute? It's not as black as it feels maybe after Millwall, and it's not as positive probably as we were getting a bit carried away with after Sheffield United, Middlesbrough and Ipswich. So where they are on the table now is probably fair game at the minute, because they've not convinced sufficiently to be any higher. But it's all about, for me now, getting those players back, those key players back, and keeping them fit. And if they do that, then I think it could be a good second part of the season. Whether it's good enough to get in the top six, because the horse has already bolted, time will tell.
Full time at Bolton, it felt quite black because we had a miserable day. As from a reporting point of view, didn't we? The Wi-Fi didn't work. The 4G barely worked. We struggled to get our updates out, and I was annoyed with Josh Murphy, to be perfectly honest. He scored because it was a good goal, a good finish, but all our updates were so slow to get out that meant we had to get a goal and the full time updates out in a short space of time. But it was freezing cold up there. It was quite a miserable long old day. So, and I think that was the same for quite an impressive following, 1,200 people to get to Bolton on Saturday. But I think, you know, within a few hours you started to think, well, actually it wasn't quite as bad. It wasn't Millwall. They've only lost 2-1. They did have enough chances to get something from it. So it's not too much doom and gloom, but it's been tough to take this little run, this, you know, three successive league defeats, four in all competitions if you include Arsenal. It has been a little bit tough to take, and I keep coming back to that. I feel sorry for the home fans who haven't had any of the fun, really. You know, what have they had? A 2-0 against QPR at home, a 1-0 against Birmingham where the goal was after 3 minutes. There's been some pretty difficult ones to sit through, and I think I've mentioned him to you guys before, but my dad sits in the south stand, and his best mate is actually a Chelsea fan, but has now been a season ticket holder at Norwich for the best part of 20 years. And I mean, he tears strips off Norwich whenever things are going badly, because he sees himself as a neutral, and I quite like to sort of gauge what his opinion is, to sort of see where Norwich really are. And I think he's struggling to actually even not head back to the pub at half time at the moment. So I think there's probably a fair bit of that amongst the home supporters. So that's the big thing that's got to change for me. You know, Barnsley after the break, November 18th, get a win there, get everybody back on side, calm things down a bit, get all these fitness issues dealt with. Even if you have to scrape a 1-0 win and have 30% of possession, no one will care. Just get back to winning ways at home, and then you can start to fix things.
It'll be Barnsley. Everything will be fine. It always is, he says. Brilliant. Gents, I think that's a perfect way to end it. Paddy, Dave, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will, of course, be back with podcasts, and you'll have loads of recordings and videos throughout the season. Just keep an eye on pinken.com and follow our progress there. You can subscribe for various ways on the podcast. I don't exactly remember what they are, but again, if you go to pinken.com, you'll find those too. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy the international break. We'll see you when Barnsley come to town. See you later. Bye-bye.